and her friends. She'd picked the gym bathroom because it was far from the classrooms and there were no PE classes after lunch, but it turned out to be a bad choice. Only a minute after she'd arrived in search of solitude, PTA mothers poured in after some meeting. Naomi watched the feet of the women as they crowded around the mirror. Snatches of overlapping conversations washed around her. Fundraisers and dance classes, choir outfits, cigarette brands and casserole recipes, and the best way to get a Jell-O salad out of a mold. Finally, the last ladies walked out. Naomi was about to slip out of her stall when two more women pushed through the door. One wore black Oxfords. The other had on stylish pale blue pumps. "Smart as can be," a husky voice, the one that went with the blue pumps, pronounced. "I heard Max's teacher say they read better than half the senior class, and them only in third grade." The woman in the black Oxfords laughed shrilly. "Nothing like my kids. You'd have to hide a quarter in a book to get them to open it. You know, the other day I went into Miss Bell's room and saw the boy reading an encyclopedia of all things." "And her curls. Doesn't she make you think of Shirley Temple?" They spoke the words at the same time, then laughed some more. "Adorable. But the older sister, can that really be their sister?" That was Blue Pumps. "Dark and sneaky-like." The woman in the Oxfords clucked her tongue. "Maybe a little retarded. A lot of those Mexicans are." "She might be slow when it comes to books, but have you noticed how she walks?" asked Black Oxfords, lowering her voice. "A girl like that can be fast in other areas of life, you know." "Runs in the blood." Blue Pumps coughed, then made a kissing sound at the mirror. "Is my lipstick on straight?" A moment later, she added, "You can just tell that she wants the boys to look. Did you see that thin little dress she was wearing the other night out at the oil strike? You could see what Gilbert Harris had on his mind." "I had a son, I'd be watching him like a hawk around a girl like her." "Mm-hmm." Blue Pumps began to walk toward the door. "Michael and I took a train all the way down to Brownsville once, and do you know that there were Mexicans, not even 13 years old, waddling around big-bellied?" "Can't help it, maybe." Black Oxfords followed Blue Pumps to the door. "That kind will follow their animal urges." Blue Pumps laughed, and then they were gone. Naomi stayed a long time in the stall, working her fingers through the tail of her braid, fighting to get free of their words. Naomi. On Saturday, Naomi woke up hungry for the river before the sun was even up. In the gray morning light, she saw the twins snuggled together in Beto's bed. Beto was burrowed into the pillow. Gadi was sleeping on her side, snoring a little. The corner of her mouth glistened with drool. Naomi slipped on her dress and shoes and tiptoed into the bathroom. After she'd cleaned her teeth, she surveyed what she had on hand in the kitchen for breakfast. It was barely 6. She couldn't imagine that Wash would be down by the river yet. Since Henry had started playing daddy, Naomi had seen Wash almost every weekend. She got out Muffy's recipe for sweet rolls and started the dough. For once, she wanted to be the one to spoil the twins a little. Last week, Henry had taken them to Henderson to see Camille, the movie everyone at school was talking about. When he brought it up, Naomi had felt torn between her desire to stay away from Henry and her interest in seeing the film that, according to Tommy, would make anybody with a heart cry. In the end, though, she didn't get to decide. "You've probably got heaps to do around here," Henry had said. "We'll stay out of your hair for a while." And then he and the twins were out the door. While the rolls were rising, Naomi cleaned the living room and did every chore she could without causing a racket. After half an hour, she shaped the dough, pressed it into cinnamon, and slid the rolls into the hot oven. It didn't take long to wipe up the kitchen, and she found herself looking over her school things for what might interest Wash. She pulled out her last science assignment. It was marked with a B+, the best grade she'd ever gotten. Maybe she would show it to him. As soon as the rolls were done, Naomi wrapped four in a napkin, scribbled a note about going over to Tommy's, and headed out the door with her books. Wash. Wash got to the end of the path just in time to see her smile. He pulled the collar of his jacket up and headed toward her. "Studying?" he called. She looked up. Her dark eyes were flecked with points of reflected light. "I thought you might come." She handed him one of the rolls. He finished it in two bites and reached for another. He'd skipped out on seconds at breakfast because he hadn't wanted to miss the chance to see her. "Thanks." "You make sweets like this for your sweethearts?" he asked. "Sweethearts?" She squinted at him. "You see any Mexican boys around here?" He shrugged. "Maybe back in San Antonio." "No," she said. "What do you do for your sweethearts?" "Don't have one at the moment, but I'm hoping that might change." He winked. A look he couldn't read crossed her face. Or maybe it was just a change in the light. Clouds were rolling in and threatening rain. They didn't have long to read before raindrops began to prick the surface of the water. Wash scrambled to gather up the books. "Dang it! I don't have my bag!" He yanked off his jacket and wrapped the books up inside. She took the books back from him and shook his jacket free. "It's fine," she called over her shoulder as she ran up the bank. "Maybe I'll see you next week." He reached down to find his pencil. When he went to follow her up the path, she was already gone. He scanned the branches of the trees along the path, thinking maybe she'd climbed a tree. But he didn't find her. Wash. Wash steered the twins toward a sunny spot just beyond the shade of the magnolia tree in front of his house. "Wait here," he told them. As he ran up the porch steps, he could hear them whispering about the big shade trees, the cushiony grass, his mother's tidy azalea bushes. His folks kept the place looking good. None of the built-in-a-hurry houses in the oil field camps had trees or anything like a proper yard. Against all those drab company rentals, the Fuller House probably looked like an illustration for home sweet home. Wash closed the screen door gingerly behind him. The pie baking was only about half done, but his mother was not in the kitchen. Someone was playing the piano in the parlor. It was far too graceful for Peggy to be at the keyboard. He peeked into the living room and saw that it was their neighbor, Fanny. The bathroom door was closed, which meant he had only a moment before his mother would be back in the kitchen. He selected three pies from the cooling racks lined with newspaper: pineapple, apple, and rum raisin. He held them in a careful stack in his right hand and then hurried back out the door. Wash finished his pie in 4 bites. He cocked an eyebrow at the twins, who nibbled at the crimped edge of the pies with a look of determined caution. "Y'all are making me tired," Wash said. "If you don't eat 'em, I will." Amazing Grace floated out to them through the screen door. "You hear Miss Fanny playing the piano? She's the best piano player in Egypttown, second to my mama." "It's pretty," Beto said.
"I like the pie," Gutty said. "Pineapple's better than rum raisin."
"How do you figure?" Wash asked. "I don't remember letting you try mine."
"I just know it," she said.
She licked the bright gold filling from the edge of her pie. "She's blind, you know," Wash said.
Bethel's eyes widened. "Your mother's blind? And she can make pies like this?"
"Not my ma. Miss Fanny."
He told them how Fanny had gone blind when she was 5, but his mother had taught her to play anyway. Gotti finished her pie and started in on Bethel's. He didn't seem to notice. He had a troubled look.
"It's all right, Bethel," Wash said. "Fanny's all right. We look out for her. Here in a minute, I'll walk her home."
When Wash went into the kitchen to see about some milk, his mother came out of the parlor with her arms crossed.
"Does Fanny need walking home?" he asked her.
His mother shook her head.
"Not yet. Now you tell me something. Are your guests paying? I'm not giving pies away here."
"They're just kids, Mama."
"Don't Mama me. These pies are for selling. If I wanted to give them away, I could find plenty of hungry black folks. I got enough trouble keeping you and Peggy and Cal from eating them all up. And now you want to bring even more mouths around?"
"Sorry, Mama," Wash said. Sometimes, the only way to get his mother out of a bad mood was to let her wind it down herself.
"What are you doing with those white children anyway, James Washington?"
Wash shrugged. "Their people asked could I take 'em fishing. And hey, they helped me catch 6 nice trout earlier today. I'll clean them up for you here in a minute." He crossed to the icebox and pulled out a jar of milk.
"You put that back, young man," she said.
"The kids are thirsty. There's a water pump in the side yard." Wash held on to the milk and grinned. "Nothing better than milk for growing strong bones and quenching the thirst after a famous Fuller pie. And you know old Betsy and Brenda give us more than we can drink anyhow. What about a broken pie to go with it? Maybe cherry? You see any broken pies?"
"Sure."
He grabbed one and split it in two. "Right there."
"You owe Booker another nickel," she said, wagging a finger at him.
"That Booker, he greedy," Wash grinned.
"Watch your English. You sound like a field hand."
"Thanks for the pies."
"You still owe Booker," she said again.
"Yes, ma'am, I do." Wash and the twins shared the last pie and the milk. Fanny was still playing when Rhoda came out onto the porch with her hands on her hips. Wash leaned over and told the twins,
"She looks mean, but she isn't. Say thank you, and you might see her smile."
They called out, "Thank you much, Mrs. Fuller."
Wash studied his mother's face and saw that she couldn't resist their manners.
"You're welcome," she said.
Then her expression turned sour. Wash followed her gaze to the back garden. Half a dozen crows were pecking around her potatoes and winter vegetables.
"Shoo!" she hollered, running toward the birds. "Go on!"
The crows retreated to the trees at the edge of the yard, cocking their heads silently, waiting. She turned back and marched over to where Wash and the twins were.
Next time you all come around eating my pies up, I'm going to put you to work standing in my garden keeping the crows away. You hear? Or else build me a scarecrow, and then you can have all the pies you want.
Yes, ma'am,
Gotti and Beto said together. They hugged Wash goodbye and tore off down the road.
Naomi.
Even after the twins had gone, Naomi kept watching from the woods. She watched Wash carry the empty bottle of milk to the porch. She watched him pull a few weeds from the flower beds. And she watched him go into the house and come out a minute later with a pretty girl on his arm. Her glossy hair was bobbed and tied neatly with a pink ribbon that matched the dress she wore under a pretty white coat. On the way down the steps, Wash steadied her as if she were a fragile package he did not want to break. Her perfect white teeth showed when she laughed, which was often. Naomi stood frozen. Her mind churned. Was this what he had meant when he spoke of sweethearts? No, she hadn't imagined everything by the river. She knew she hadn't. But there was also the fact of the girls at Mason's. One of them had said his name like it was all the explanation anyone needed. Was this the same girl? She hadn't gotten a good look before. Wash walked the girl out of the yard and down the road away from the house. She could hear their laughter and wondered if he was telling that girl the same jokes he'd told down by the river. Once they were gone, Naomi tore down the path into the woods, trying to outrun the sob that was caught in her throat. And without remembering the steps in between, or the light in the woods, or the sound of the river, Naomi found herself at the back steps of Henry's house. Dinner. That was what she was going to think about. In the kitchen, she hacked at a chunk of ham with a knife and brutalized an onion. When Beto asked her what was wrong, she told him to hush and wash his hands. And even when his eyes went wet with hurt and worry, she could not summon any kindness. The part of her charged with feeling was too bruised to give or receive such gifts. November, 1936. Henry. Henry recoiled from the sweet, sick smell. On the porch, his only thought had been to get his boots off, wash up, and toss himself into bed like he always did after an all-night shift. Now, he wanted to run. But Naomi was already calling, "Back here!" As he walked down the hall, the stench grew stronger. He gulped air and then pushed the door to the bedroom open. The twins were curled up on the double bed, on towels spread over a spare sheet. From the pile on the floor, it looked as though they'd already soiled the other bedclothes. Naomi wiped their faces down with a damp rag. Henry stepped cautiously into the room.
"Hi, Daddy," Gutty said.
Then she lurched forward and vomited. Somehow, Naomi managed to catch it in a bowl. She set the bowl on top of the dresser and then began to clean Gotti again. Henry felt a gag rise in his throat.
I'll go get Muff," he stammered, taking a step back.
Naomi shook her head.
"She's pregnant. Can't get her sick."
"A doctor, then."
"No need. It's just a stomach bug. It'll pass in a couple of days."
"Days?" Henry groaned.
"Set these on the back porch?" Naomi asked. "I'll start washing as soon as I get these two settled."
She didn't give him time to respond, just scooped the mess of linens from the floor and shoved them into his arms. Some of the stink was coming from there. He flinched, sure a glob of vomit had grazed his hand. The sheets dropped to the floor. He stared down at them like they were a tangle of rattlesnakes. Naomi sighed.
Never mind. Maybe you could buy some crackers and ginger ale?
Crackers, he mumbled. Ginger ale. And he stumbled down the hall and headed for his truck. At Turner's, he stood in front of a shelf of crackers, baffled by the variety.
Mr. Smith! Haven't seen you in a while, the pimply clerk called.
Then he went back to totaling an order for a gaunt housewife.
So, Mrs. Turner said, walking over, what can I get for you? We've missed your business around here.